And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
My next guest, a former Silicon Valley executive, explains how almost miraculous success of the internet has also created a unique set of hazards, in effect overconnecting us with the direst consequences for our political, economic, and day-to-day lives. We'll discuss his latest book, Overconnected. Bill Davidow has been a high technology industry executive and venture capitalist for more than 30 years, having worked at managerial positions at Intel Corp, Hewlett-Packard, and General Electric. He is now an active advisor to More Davidow Ventures, a venture capital firm. An electrical engineer by training, Bill earned degrees at Dartmouth College, the California Institute of Technology, and Stanford University. He's the author of Marketing High Technology, and he's the co-author of Total Customer Service and The Virtual Corporation, which, by the way, I have on my shelf. His latest book is titled Overconnected, The Promise and Threat of the Internet. Joining us from Hawaii. Hi, Bill. How are you this morning?
I'm just great.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest, and thank you for being a thought leader in this area. Your book, Overconnected, I mean, you wrote a book about how many of us feel today. So, and you make your point in a very interesting way, because you connect such disparate events as the May 6th of 2010 flash crash. And for those who don't remember, that's when the Dow Jones plunged 1,000 points in just 1 hour. Also in late 2008, when three of the largest banks in Iceland failed and it took down the entire Icelandic economy. Earlier in 2008, of course, we had the global financial crisis, the Arab Spring, which were the two revolts in Egypt and Tunisia. And interestingly enough, Private Bradley Manning, who, for those of you who don't remember, released military cables to WikiLeaks, and government email hackings and hackings getting into Sony customer accounts, et cetera, et cetera. You bring all of these things together in an interesting way. So tell my listeners, how are these events connected, and in what way did the internet make them more virulent?
Well, the way they're connected is all through the fact that we have been increasing the level of connectivity in society, and society designs itself around the way it connects. We designed ourselves around the railroad when the railroad came into place. We've designed ourselves around the automobile, and that created the suburbs and the shopping centers. And whenever you do change the level of connectivity, you end up with different social structures, different economic structures, and all of these things. And you end up with very rapid change that leads to some surprising results. And in the case of the internet, it's created this change at a very, very abrupt rate. And our financial systems and our security systems and our social systems have not adapted to it.
Well, it's interesting because you draw the parallel to the transportation networks that we've set up in the past. Isn't the internet just the next logical evolution of that? I mean, connecting us electronically, whereas the train, the automobile, even the telegraph and the telephone connected us and created different social interactions, didn't they?
They absolutely did, but they were slow by today's standards. If you look at it, it took the railroad probably at least a century and probably closer to two centuries from the time that it was invented to the time that it had all of these dramatic effects. It's probably more like a century. The automobile was more like 50 years. And with the internet, these things happen overnight. You create a virtual bookstore, you call it Amazon, you do that in one day, and then the next year, you've got a bookstore in every home in the United States that has an internet connection. Borders with whom is in great financial trouble right now, took almost 100 years to create a retail chain. So here is somebody who did in 1 year what it took Borders almost a century to do.
All right, a very good point. My guest is Bill Davidow, author of the book Overconnected. And Bill, in the book, you assert that the rise of the internet has given a new exponential impetus to the connectivity that's already around us. That's the point that you're trying to make. This connectivity brings its potential threats through something that you call positive feedback loops. So first of all, what are positive feedback loops, and how does the internet accelerate them?
Well, everybody knows what positive feedback is. We just don't call it that. For example, the compounding of money is positive feedback. If you put money in a savings account, you get 2% interest. That 2% gets fed back into the account and your account doubles in 36 years. If you get paid 5% interest, a little bit more positive feedback, your account doubles in 14 years. So positive feedback drives rapid change or increases in it. And what happens when you increase interconnections and when you strengthen interconnections, you get a lot more positive feedback driving change. And as a result of that, change accelerates. And the thing that has happened with the Internet is that we've created so many connections in so many places that we've increased the positive feedback in all of our systems, or a great many of our systems. And a certain amount of positive feedback is great. It causes economic growth. Too much positive feedback causes things to get driven to extremes. So if you take a look at the financial systems, they've been suffering from too much positive feedback, and you get these extreme bubbles or extreme recessions and things like this. So positive feedback can be great. It's what created Silicon Valley. It's what caused our economy to grow. But too much of a good thing can cause problems.
All right. My guest is Bill Davidow. Bill, how are these positive feedback loops different from Malcolm Gladwell's tipping points?
Well, Malcolm Gladwell's tipping point is an example of a positive feedback loop. And he just has said that somebody who can motivate a tipping point, or there are certain situations that reach a tipping point. But we have all kinds of names for positive feedback loops that we use. Herd mentality is a positive feedback loop. When we talk about momentum in the economy, we're talking about positive feedback loops. And so we have all of these different names for them, and the underlying phenomena is still the same. Also, biological contagions are driven by positive feedback loops.
All right. My guest is Bill Davidow, author of the book Overconnected, The Promise and Threat of the Internet. So, Bill, let's use some examples to really drive this point home. And I'm going to throw out the newspaper industry right now. How does the abrupt changes going on in the whole media structure really impact the overconnectivity that the newspapers are now feeling?
Well, all right. So the newspapers were designed around a certain kind of connection scheme, and that was to get information to you. They had to put the ink on the paper and use a physical delivery system to get the information to you. What the Internet did is it changed the way you could connect with information. And as a result, what happened, and I use the word overconnected to describe something that goes through this rapid environmental change, they changed the way that you could connect with newspapers or connect with the news. And this drove a rapid transition that they were totally maladapted for. They didn't need their physical plant. And on top of that, what it has done is it has broadened the reach of some of the national media. So as an example, one set of reporters can serve to provide news to hundreds of millions of people. And as a result of that, there aren't the need for as many reporters.
I see. All right. All very interesting how that positive feedback loop works itself in the newspaper industry. I want to bring it back to the financial industry, Bill, if I can, for just a minute. And let's look more closely at the May 2010 flash crash.
Sure.
Now, you contend that high-frequency trading was part of the cause of the crash. I'm going to play the devil's advocate for just a minute. And I'm going to contend that it was really the conversion of the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ to a decimal trading system instead of a fractional trading system that was as much of the cause as the high-frequency trading. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the conversion was definitely part of it. But you needed a couple of other things. You needed the alternative trading systems, which were the electronic exchanges that sprung up and were not regulated, and you couldn't have created them without electronic connectivity. And then you needed the trading robots to step in that could make hundreds of thousands of transactions in the time that it took, or tens of thousands of transactions in the time it took for a human being to do the same thing. So suddenly, you went from a period where all this trading was going on in a regular, in a relatively regulated environment. The New York Stock Exchange had specialists who got in and kind of slowed things down when things were going too fast, to the Wild West. And currently, I think it's around two-thirds of the trading that goes on, or two-thirds of the volume on these exchanges, is nothing more than robots talking to robots. And those robots have their own programs, and I will use the word minds. It's not really a mind that is driving the trading experience. And those robots got out of control on May 6th.
All right. Well, let's take a look at another example, a little bit more current than that. Let's take a look at J.P. Morgan's whale trade, where the firm lost at least $2 billion. It may be more than that. Jamie Dimon, who is the CEO of J.P. Morgan, blamed it on a bad trade, blamed it on errors, human error, sloppiness, etc. The question that I have for you is this, though. With such a complex trading system as J.P. Morgan has, why didn't Jamie Dimon, or certainly somebody underneath him, see this coming? I mean, was the trade too big, too complex? What was at the heart of this? Was this what you call a normal accident?
It is what I would call a normal accident, and in these very, very complex systems, they are unavoidable. And just like you're going to have a nuclear accident every now and then, because in complex systems, you can't put everything into place. One of the things that people do not realize about derivatives is that in the year 2000, there were $60 trillion worth of derivatives in existence. That is equal to about the total economic output of the world economy. Today, there are around $600 trillion. That's 10 times the economic output. And those instruments are all these different complex things, and nobody knows how they all interact. And what happened at J.P. Morgan was people were trading things that they thought they knew how they interacted with one another, and they got a horrible surprise. They interacted differently. And you can put tremendous amounts of controls in place, and you are still going to have problems.
All right. My guest is Bill Davidow, author of the book Overconnected, The Promise and the Threats of the Internet. So, Bill, you've very clearly laid out what the problem is. Now, give us some solutions. What do you propose that we do about all this?
Well, the fundamental thing that we have to do is we've got to reduce the amount of positive feedback in the system. Now, that's a very general term, and there are thousands of ways you could do this. But you can pick a conservative approach to solving the problem or a liberal approach to solving the problem. But in the example of high-frequency trading, if you were to tax all those financial transactions at the rate of about 0.01%, you would probably reduce the amount of high-frequency trading by 90%. And having 10% of the world doing high-frequency trading or 10% of the stocks doing high-frequency trading is probably a good thing, but 60% is wrong, and you would greatly reduce the chances of a flash crash.
Well, I'm not a big proponent of taxation at any level, Bill, but where would the money go from for the taxation? What would it be used for once you collect it? Because you're talking about $600 trillion, even at 1/100th of a percent. That's still a boatload of money.
Well, I think you could use it to pay down the national debt if you wanted. All I'm doing is giving you an example.
Fair enough.
You can try and solve the problem with regulation of the nature by writing all these little prescriptive rules, and that's going to lead to, in my opinion, a worse situation.
I couldn't agree with you more. All right, Bill, so we have to look at things differently. We have to turn down the positive feedback. What else can we do to remedy the situation?
Well, we can design the systems differently from the ground up, and we can start doing that earlier. For example, the time to get control of the problems going on with derivatives was in 2002, and not wait until 2012 to worry about it. And what we have to realize is that we've got to design safeguards into systems. And the example I always give is if we waited until 10 uh, 7 87s crashed, before we went about designing in the safeguards, none of us would get on airplanes. And yet today, we introduce financial innovations, we introduce tremendous numbers of innovations in society, and wait until the accidents occur before we worry about putting the safeguards in place. So when these systems can race out of control very quickly, we've got to act more proactively. And that is an extremely difficult thing to do, because you're talking about fixing problems before they are evident.
Well, now, Bill, let me play devil's advocate, if I can, for just a moment here. Because when you talk about an airplane or a nuclear reactor, you've got a human being interacting with that particular machine. In the case of derivatives, as a great example, there you've got the animal instincts of Wall Street that kick in, and that greed mentality kicks in, much more so than flying an airplane or running a nuclear power plant.
You're absolutely right. And the question is, this is a very tough, what I will call, philosophical question. But the question is, if you look at the damage that those systems did, which is, measured in terms of trillions of dollars, can you afford to sit idly by and let people, engage in activities that can have major destructive effects? And that is one of the problems that the world's financial system is dealing with.
My guest has been Bill Davidow, author of the book Overconnected, The Promise and Threat of the Internet. Bill, you've probably piqued the interest of many of my listeners. If they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I've got a website called davidow.com. I also blog for The Atlantic, so if they search The Atlantic, they can and do a search on my name, they can find some of the blogs I've written.
That is great. Bill, thank you so much for getting up so early and being my guest here on the Bill Frank Radio Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you. And I'll be back with my next guest after these words from our sponsor.